Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Chuck Oliver Show podcast is presented by Larceny Bourbon. So smooth, it's criminal. Larceny reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
In the South, it's always college football season. And the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Chuck Oliver Show continues on a Wednesday. Appreciate everybody getting in here, being part of the program. And since it is a Wednesday, you know what hour one was. Hour one was Chris Landry. Spends the entire second half of hour one with us. Every bottom hour one, every Wednesday, all the way through the top. And that's always going to be Chris Landry. First-hand information directly from former professional and college coach, scout, administrator, whatever you can do around football, he's done it. Always love having him on. If you didn't hear the interview, or maybe you did want to hear it again, for any reason, go to thepodcastpark.com or wherever you get your podcast. And just click subscribe. It'll show up on your device, in your phone, iPad, whatever. You get it every single day. Just click subscribe. So that was Chris Landry, hour one. Got Jake Rowe from 247 coming up in just a couple of minutes. Georgia has been scooping up five stars like they're stray animals. Just no problem at all. And then it just two more. So transfers coming into the program. And then bottom of the hour from Saturday down south, Connor O'Gara going to stop in. And we will do a bird's eye of the entire conference, the Southeastern Conference. Again, bottom of the hour. But right now, I'm going to get you up to date.
Everything you need to know about college football. Every single day, this is CFB 365, presented by EcoDerm. Text EcoDerm to 31996 now for your free sample of EcoDerm Pain Relief Cream and CBD from Frank Thomas. Text ECODERM to 31996 now.
All right, I only got one headline, and it's the College Football Hall of Fame ballot is out. Now, there are other important things going on in the sport, and we will continue to talk about those, but specifically, the College Football Hall of Fame ballot has been released, and I've told you there are a different number of players and coaches from the top division, what we used to call D1, through Division 1AA, Division 2, NAIA, I mean, all up and down. So there's different levels of the nominees, and to be nominated, it has to come from either the current athletic director of the school, whoever. It has to come through some official means, so it's not like a media thing or anything. And there are some pretty tight restrictions that mean some people aren't even eligible. Like, you have to have been a first-team All-American from one of five recognized sources, things like that. If you're a head coach, you have to have been a head coach 10 years or you're not eligible. So a guy like Irk Russell, he can't get in. But the ballot is out. 78 players and seven coaches are on the ballot from FBS. This year, 99 players and 33 coaches from, like, 1AA, et cetera, down to NAIA, the divisional levels. And the number for players this year is 11. And I told you, I always go in alphabetical order because I'm never going to evaluate a guy as a Hall of Famer and then skip over him. I am dilemmatized because I have run out of votes, and there's somebody that I just can't in good conscience not put on the ballot. In order, I started on the ballot. Flozell Adams in, Sean Alexander in, Morton Anderson in. I'm talking about players that earned their way into the College Hall of Fame. And if they're not there, you're missing a brick in that wall. LeVar Arrington, Champ Bailey, Eric Berry, Michael Bishop, Reggie Bush, Mark Carrier, Tim Couch, and Kevin Falk. I got through the Fs. There are years I've gotten through the Ps before I run out of votes. Usually it's like an LMN sort of thing. Kevin Falk is the last vote that I have, and I'm listing him. There's no room for Marvin Jones. And I want to tell you right now, one of the Florida State experts that we have on regularly, he texted me a few months ago. He's like, hey, don't you vote for the College Football Hall of Fame? I was like, why? He didn't sound happy. Through a text, he didn't sound happy. How is it possible Marvin Jones isn't in the College Football Hall of Fame? I went and checked. I said, I have to be honest. It surprises me that he's not. And I will set out to correct that. I never imagined that the very next opportunity would come a couple of months later for me to help correct that. And I would be out of votes before I ever got to Jay. I don't know what to do here. No room for shade tree. Marvin Jones was just it's hard. He was an old school, like, thumper inside middle linebacker, which you don't really see a whole lot of him. He could fly. My goodness, he was so good. And I'll be honest, until a couple of months, whatever, 2-3 months ago, whenever I got that text, I never realized that Shade Tree wasn't in the Hall of Fame. And now I'm out of vote, so I got to decide what to do there. All right, consider yourself up to date. There are other news stories. We'll talk about them as we go through the rest of the show. All right, we're going to take a quick break here. Come back, continue talking college football next.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Hey Atlanta, Hudson Mason here. Is a new roof still on your to-do list, but you've been delayed due to rising home service costs? Well, here's a fantastic solution from Accent Roofing Service. Zero down, zero payments, and zero interest for a full year. That's right, you can get your new roof now and start paying next year. Act quickly because Accent's incredible offer of 000 with a 12-month deferred payment option for a lifetime roof system isn't going to last long. Contact the craftsman at Accent Roofing Service today, accentroofingservice.com.
College football time in the South. Now back to more of the king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
I may have made a mistake earlier, and in the interest of accuracy, I said, Kirby, scooping up 5 stars. I believe Darian Kendrick was a 4-star. I don't know that, but I think he was a 4-star. But let me tell you what he's viewed now. That was like 3 years ago. I'll tell you what Darian Kendrick is viewed as now. He's a Sunday guy. That's beyond dispute. I mean, there's talk about him being a first-round draft pick at corner. Now, there were also some charges that either had to get dismissed or pled out or reduced or something. Kirby has a lot more flexibility in these areas, for instance, than Mark Richt, and I applaud him for it. And one of the first things he said, he was like, why are we counting an arrest as a conviction? Why are we doing that? And I was like, that's a fair question. So Darian Kendrick getting his legal stuff worked out, and Georgia goes from a position, and I mean there was a vacuum of talent in the secondary, but especially at corner. They had a huge need. Well, they got an all-ACC performer and a potential first-round pick. And then they got Eric Gilbert, who's the highest-rated tight end ever in recruiting history for all time. Against that backdrop, I want to talk to somebody who covers the program, a good friend of the program from 24/7. It is Jake Rowe. Jake, how are you today?
I'm good, man. How are you doing, Chuck?
Doing okay. So you weren't on vacation this week, because it always happens, I hear, in May and June. You know, July, you're going to be there because of media days and everything else. So you weren't one of the writers who were on vacation when all this comes down.
Nope, not at all. This is normally the week where we would be down in Destin for the spring meetings, and I've missed those for a couple years now with COVID and everything, ready to get those back. But now vacation comes later this month for me.
Talk a little bit about Darian Kendrick, first of all. I'm transparent about it. I mean, I understand that there are illegalities and there are bad kids. I also understand there's just immaturity and knuckleheads, and Darian Kendrick kind of resides in the middle somewhere. I mean, it's not every kid who gets kind of dismissed from a Dabo program.
I really don't know everything that went on there, but I do know this. I heard you were talking about, Kirby having a little more leeway, and he definitely does. But at the same time, the administration, something like that goes way up. I'm talking about Jerry Moorhead, UGA president type thing. I mean, that's something that gets discussed all the way to the top when there are charges and things of that nature. And I believe that Georgia would have just kind of hung around and let this thing play out a little further if it needed to, or they would have just passed in general if this wasn't, you know, a situation that they felt real good about getting cleared up. I don't know the details of how it's been cleared up. I don't know the details of what's going on with Darian Kendrick. But I do know with that whole legal situation that Georgia, you know, listen, they've got a lot more information than we do. You know, they've talked to the kid. They've probably talked to his lawyer. They've talked to a lot of different people. So I think ultimately they felt comfortable enough to make that move. And, you know, this is an off season where Georgia has talked a lot about character and a lot about, you know, different facets of things. And I think that, you know, when you talk about adding a guy like Darian Kendrick, yeah, the big game experience, he's a really good player. He was actually a five-star prospect, a five-star wide receiver, number 26 overall player in the country per the composite. You know, they got a guy, the type of guy that they want as far as the talent goes. But at the end of the day, if things aren't working out, if he's not, you know, kind of on his best behavior and engaged like they want him to be, I don't think they'll have any problem just kind of saying, all right, well, you know, this isn't working out. And because they'll be back to where they were before they added him.
Yeah, and it's interesting because you say you don't know either. That's why I was saying here's what I know. It was either dismissed, pled down, reduced charges, something, because, I mean, felonies just don't do it, man. So that whatever the details are, we'll find out whenever we find out, because it's going to be a matter of public record. But I just know they got a supreme talent there at a position of need. Flip it around to Gilbert. You personally, I mean, you cover the program. You're there every single day. When did you start seeing that this may actually come to a head? Because, you know, Kirby was mentioned all during his high school recruiting, so that wasn't new. But as far as, hey, this is real and it could come down, what was your personal timeline on this story?
You know, I would say from my end of things, and listen, Rusty Mansell, you know Rusty, I know Rusty, very connected, does a phenomenal job, broke that story yesterday. Yep. Rusty has kind of had a better beat on this than me, but he and I have talked about it on and off, and I think he would agree. There have been like pockets of Georgia-heavy information in this whole thing to begin with, and I don't know if that's a reflection of how Eric Gilbert was feeling. I don't know if that was a reflection as to how those around him were feeling or what, but, you know, you were here in Georgia, and then Florida kind of eased in there. They got a commitment from him. He decommitted. You were here in Georgia again. Heard a lot about Alabama there for a minute or two. Then all of a sudden it became really popular to think he was going back to LSU. And then in the last, you know, week to 10 days, it just steadily built towards Georgia. And, you know, I think a lot of that had to do with him, you know, working out with Terrence Edwards and kind of having, you know, that influence and a guy that really loves Georgia football like Terrence does. I don't think Terrence would ever push it on anybody like that, but I think just having that influence and knowing that, hey, if I go to Georgia, I got Terrence down the road, I got Mom down the road, I've got some different, you know, people around me, some support system people around me that can kind of help out. And I think that's something that Eric Gilbert kind of learned there. And ultimately, I think it was just a decision that he kind of came to with his mother, that they found out that, hey, he can play close to home. He's got a sister that means a lot to him. I think it came down to a family thing and a support system thing. And, you know, Georgia recruited him real hard out of high school. And I think this goes to show that, listen, when Georgia lets, you know, when an in-state kid gets away from Georgia, I think Kirby does a pretty good job of maintaining that relationship and making that kid feel like, hey, I'm welcome back if I want to come back. I mean, Justin Fields committed to Georgia, left Georgia, came back to Georgia for a spring practice, for crying out loud. So I think that's something that may be a little bit of an underrated thing that Kirby's done. This is the first time I think he's really been able to get an impact, you know, in-state kid to kind of come back and join the program as a transfer. Maybe he's done it before. I'm having
that's
a hard time putting
Demetrius
my name on
Robertson,
it.
Isn't it? That's supposed to be him.
Yeah, right. Yeah, Demetrius Robertson. That's another one. That's a good one. I guess it's been so long now, and it's kind of funny he's still in school. I think this one has a chance to be a Jarvis Jones type of impact, the Jarvis Jones type of transfer back home type situation.
Where he leads the SEC in sacks and tackles for loss in two straight years. That was pretty impactful.
Yeah, very impactful. You know, I don't know that Eric Gilbert will be able to do that, because it's just a different age of catching the football in college football now. But I think he will make an instant impact for this team.
Is there too much conversation about, well, will Kirby use him?
Yeah, I think so. You know, it's I just don't think you look back at Georgia's. I mean, listen, find me somebody that has really lit it up in Georgia's passing game the past few years with the scheme that Georgia ran and with the run-heavy stuff and with the style of play. It just it wasn't there. But you saw last year, Todd Monken will put the darn thing in the air 35, 40 times if he feels like he needs to. I mean, he tried to go out there and sling it around against Alabama with Stetson Bennett. So it's not like, you know, they trust JT Daniels. They're going to throw the football. You know, Eric Gilbert's going to play wide receiver. He's not going to be locked in at tight end. Will they run some formations where he's basically the tight end or is basically a tight end? I'm sure they will. They'll run some tight stuff. But he's going to split out wide, and he's going to run slants, and he's going to run goes and fades, and that's how they're going to use him, and I think he'll be used well.
And if he takes an outside backer with him, suddenly it's deep, and if it's a defensive back, then it's a slant. And, I mean, that's just a – we saw it as a freshman at LSU. It's a nightmare when he's healthy and right and out there. And I want to ask you something. I don't put kids' personal business out there, but I know there are a couple of potential hurdles. First of all, the accounting one, the housekeeping one. What about the interconference transfers? I mean, that could change any time, but it hasn't changed yet. So, you know, Kirby and UGA and Gilbert, they still got to work through those waters, right?
Yeah, provided they're meeting in some way as far as SEC spring meetings this week or next week or whenever, I'm sure they're going to vote on that at that point.
Yeah.
And, you know, for Nick Saban to take Henry Toto and for, you know, Kirby to take Brandon Turnage and Eric Gilbert and LSU to take Major Burns, and, I mean, you go on and on and on. I just think there's too much buzz out there. There's too much going on to make you think that these coaches aren't all kind of on the same page a little bit, and that's let them go, them do it, because you know these coaches are focused on their own roster. I have a hard time believing they're all colluding behind the scenes to say, hey, let's keep Kirby from getting Brandon Turnage and Eric Gilbert, because you know it might help him more than it helps us. I just don't see that, because whatever they do, it's going to be hard to it's going to be hard to put that toothpaste back in the tube.
All right, we got minute and a half or so left, so you can run with it a little bit. Any other concerns about Eric Gilbert getting on the field this year beyond the SEC and what they do in Birmingham with that vote?
No, not at all. I mean, again, this goes back to the Darian Kendrick thing. You know, you kind of have to just look and see, read the tea leaves here, and it's, you know, Georgia. If they have a spot to add a guy, and they added that guy, then they got to feel pretty good about him being on the field. They got to feel pretty good about him being there. And if what we're told, he's there, he's on campus, he's moved in, he's ready to roll. Did that yesterday afternoon, and you know that's the way it is. And so I don't think that they would. You know, you got to get accepted in the school before you can enroll. And for him to get accepted in the school, he has to kind of have his academic affairs in order. And I believe all of that's been taken care of.
All right, appreciate it, brother. It's great information today. I appreciate the insight. Thank you.
You got it, Chuck. Take it easy, buddy.
All right. Jake Rowe, again, does a great job there with 247, Dogs 24/7. And there's a lot of moving parts with Gilbert. And the payoff is that as an 18-year-old running around against the backdrop of a pandemic in a place where it started raging. And Baton Rouge, they had their own little college towns. We talked about this, like, I think it was right after Thanksgiving, like that next week or two. Top 20 places for COVID outbreaks in America, like 19 of them were college towns in the South. But, you know, you are trying to project what the kid's going to be, again, healthy, right, squared away, motivated, all these things that you know, let's assume that, let's for the purpose of this conversation. I saw what he did last year in the SEC with some dysfunction around him on the team. And we're clearly the season wasn't going the way that LSU was expecting or wanting or anything else. And up until the point where it was, I think, after eight games, and he's gone, he produced. Now, there's a lot more to it than just somebody who can go out there and physically produce on the field. A lot more to it. And Georgia is way comfortable enough, and so are the Gilberts, to say, all right, well, let's stop playing footsie and let's just go ahead and formalize this thing. So I'm going to tell you, skill-wise and ability-wise, and this isn't a projection from like a high school recruit, that kid can play.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season. Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
The transfer portal continues to excite coaches everywhere, and that is now we're a full 24 hours into some unofficial visits, which in two more days become just it's going to be like midnight madness all over college campuses with the recruiting events coming back and official visits and such. So that's going on with the high school kids, but it's also going on with kids in the transfer portal. And almost every coach right now, at this point, most coaches are, we got one spot or two spot. What do you want? Oh, a lineman. You can start with an offensive lineman, but maybe a situational pass rusher, an edge guy. But you want lineman. And so that's what everybody wants. Kirby's treating the transfer portal like it's Amazon. I had some needs. I looked down around the house on Sunday. I was like, oh, we need some dog treats, and I need some Splenda, and I need new coffee Keurig things. And so I just went to Amazon. I was like, I have a checklist. Click, 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 send. Kirby did that with the transfer portal. I need a tight end. I need somebody to play the star position, and we need a field corner who can run. All right. He went to the portal. Amazon, click, all right, payment, and boom, three players show up. It's just unbelievable how specific and targeted, and he got maybe the best guy at all three spots. Want to welcome on now, man who covers the entirety of the SEC, but we'll start a little bit in Athens. From Saturday Down South, it is Connor O'Gara. Connor, welcome, man. How are you today?
I'm doing well. You know, not as good as Kirby, but I'm not going to measure myself up against Kirby. I don't necessarily have the means to go out and get five stars just kind of at a moment's notice, but I'm doing well, all things considered.
Yeah, and there's a third part here that we mentioned, I don't know, a month ago, whenever it was, is Tyke Smith, who is a corner, slot corner, but he's a star. He's that inside guy. Then they went out and got the real corner in Darian Kendrick. Just an unbelievable job by Kirby and that staff. But talk about what the on-field presence is going to be. You get upperclassmen in the secondary, that's such an advantage.
It really is. And, you know, for those who follow Pro Football Focus, you know, Tyke Smith had the number one grade in coverage among all returning safeties in college football. And then, you know, you get him to be able to line up and guard these guys in the slot, which that's the direction the SEC is heading with all of these stud receivers who are now asked to line up in the slot. To get a guy like him is really important. And then the move to get Kendrick, I mean, that's pretty obvious. You know, you lose your top three cornerbacks. We know about the youth in the secondary. And now you get to go out and have him play against Clemson possibly in his first game. I mean, that's crazy in itself, kind of an underrated storyline. But, you know, Georgia has been able to address its needs via the transfer portal. I look at those two guys and I say, all right, you know, assuming that they're able to stay healthy and stay on the field, then, you know, that's going to give Georgia some immediate help. The interesting thing is looking at Gilbert and his usage. And that situation is just very unique because it's not a natural fit. And that's why he's playing receiver. If they just had a spot open at tight end, or if they were running a ton of 12 personnel, I think we're talking about a different situation here. But instead, it's like, hey, you want to come in here and replace George Pickens and provide that impact out wide? Here's what we can do for you. And then, you know, sure enough, as Kirby often does, he finds a way to get the five stars to sign on the dotted line.
All right. I don't mean to be too casual and make too much of an assumption here, or maybe take Dan Mullen for granted, but people, and rightfully so, Kyle Pitts and Tony and Trask, I'm like, they're going to figure it out. Let's talk about the Florida defense. I mean, am I being too casual with that? Because I literally think Dan Mullen, as long as he's the coach, he's like the chef who can walk into the pantry and go, all right, what do we got here? They'll be good on offense. I'm pretty confident about that. How do they get better on defense?
They have to. They simply have to be, or else Todd Grantham will be out of a job. I mean, it's that simple. And I think you look at some of the issues that they had last year, and maybe, you know, having a weird offseason impacted that. They should have been better. There's just no way around it. But they have three legit first-team All-SEC candidates this year. Kyrie Elam at corner, one of the best corners in the country. He's not going to get the press of a Derek Stingley necessarily, but he's tremendous at coverage. And then you also have guys up front, Brett Cox and Zachary Carter, the two guys that I kind of look at and I say, all right, if those guys are able to be the typical Todd Grantham, get to the quarterback, you know, type of game-changing guys, then that really changes what they could do. They have to be better and more consistent than they were last year. When this defense cannot generate pressure on the quarterback, it falls apart. It's pretty simple. They didn't do that well enough last year, and they weren't very good. I think they get better. I think they have nowhere to go but up. They're returning some nice pieces in the middle of that defense as well, and obviously they have some questions at defensive tackle, but I just think that Todd Grantham has too much riding on this, and the fact that Dan Mullen kind of stuck his neck out to be able to keep him on staff shows you that there is just so much pressure on that defense to succeed. I think they can.
Well, flip it around the other side of the field, because if there was any unit that I was, and I actually said as a disclaimer, I was like, I don't know how good Mississippi State's going to be as a team. I can't tell you what the record's going to be, but boy, they'll score. There'll be yards and points. And that wasn't really the case. It was against LSU in the opener, and then sporadically, it was a little EKG last season, but it really surprised. I didn't expect it to look like Wazoo or Texas Tech in year 4, 5, or 6, but I expected it to be better than it was last year.
I did too, and I think maybe the thing that we lost track of in year one of the Leach era is how that is often such a massive transition. And the LSU game, it totally skewed things, and we were led to believe that this offense was really going to take off, and it just wasn't built that way. And when you can't block a three-man rush, there's really not a whole lot you can do from an offensive standpoint. Mississippi State was just horrendous on the offensive line. And if they're not better this year, they're not going to make that year two jump that we've seen Mike Leach make at Texas Tech, and we saw him make it at Washington State as well. They're set to, they should improve by like a touchdown a game. I mean, that's not saying a whole lot considering where they were last year, but they would have to be, in order for them to not have some significant improvement this year, it would really take something going horribly, horribly wrong. Mike Leach has brought in a ton of different quarterbacks, including Jack Abraham, the transfer from Southern Miss, to be able to figure that position out, because you have to be better this year. They didn't have the personnel to really be able to succeed last year, and he wasn't going to all of a sudden decide, you know, we're going to start giving our running backs 20 carries a game to be able to combat this drop eight coverage. They didn't want to do that. And so Mike Leach said, you know what, I'm going to stick to my guns here, and it's the air raid. This is going to work. It's just going to take time. Nobody was expecting them to succeed in year one, but that LSU game just kind of made us think, maybe this thing can get going a little bit faster than what was probably reality for that team.
Yeah. I remember telling people, you know, before the season that, you know, even like Gardner Minshew, I think that was year 7 when it was plug and play, lead the nation in passing yards. But when I saw he got a senior quarterback in from the Pac-12 that he knew, and I was like, all right, I'll buy into this. And it just absolutely wasn't what I was expecting. I want to ask you one specific thing about that, though, because, you know, after KJ Costello, the move was made, I was like, all right, well, maybe this is a guy who's a little bit, you know, a better fit for what Mike Leach wants to do. As you said, there's no guarantee that Will Rogers is even the quarterback this year. When you start a true freshman, there's supposed to be some payoff to that investment, and I don't know if he's the QB.
Yeah, I don't know either. And I had a lot of Mississippi State fans who reached out after I was kind of saying early on, you know, he's expected to be the guy. They bring in Jack Abraham. He's kind of going to push him a little bit. And, you know, it makes sense that Leach would want to do that. But I still think Will Rogers is the guy. And then you kind of remember, well, Will Rogers was Joe Moorhead's guy. He wasn't built for the air raid offense. And we know Mike Leach is very specific and particular about his quarterbacks. And we've seen at Mississippi State, if you don't succeed year two, I mean, they're not afraid to say, see ya. They don't have the contract buyouts that some of these other programs do, because in the state of Mississippi, you can only have a contract of 4 years. So they're in a little bit of a different spot there. And I'm not saying Mike Leach is on the hot seat or anything like that, but he knows I need to succeed and I need to show that this air raid thing can work. Otherwise, these people can turn on me in a hurry.
I'm just going to give you a scenario. It's not my prediction. I don't know how Texas A&M fans are going to respond to like a 9-3 season, and that absolutely could happen. I mean, when you go from a 3.5-year starter at quarterback and all the other things we know, 4 starters in the offensive, all of that stuff, and I know he's recruited and stacked the classes, et cetera, I don't think 9-3 would be a horrible season given the backdrop, 10-2, but it's not winning the division and going to Atlanta. Just talk about the A&M fan base come the first Saturday of December, and they're hanging Christmas lights with a staple gun.
Well, not all 9-3 seasons are created equal, right? What if a 9-3 season includes a win against Alabama? That changes everything. If they're able to actually stay on the field with Alabama for the first time in the Jimbo Fisher era, that totally changes the entire complexion of the season, and it is going to be a glass half full approach for this program. Now, you're coming off the best AP poll finish that A&M has had in 81 years. There is no guarantee that they're able to maintain that level, and if taking a step back is 9-3, there are worse. The worst things in the world. I mean, A&M fans have seen it. They've experienced those rough Novembers. They know it better than anyone. But I'm fascinated by this team because you still return 9 of 11 guys who caught a pass last year. You have such a great backfield with Isaiah Spiller, Devon Achane, and then Anaya Smith. He's going to be playing more in the slot this year than he did last year. But I just think that they have so many intriguing pieces. And then with Leal and the defensive line, I mean, they are just in a different type of scenario than they were a couple of years ago. And now with all of these classes are Jimbo Fisher's classes, that just kind of changes things. And I look at them and I wonder, can they beat Alabama? Is this finally setting up for Jimbo Fisher to get over that hump to be the first Saban disciple to beat the master? I'm not saying that it can't happen, but, you know, I find myself very intrigued by this A&M team, and a lot of it is the way that they finished last year.
Is Jamon Osmond not one of the weirdest things you've seen in recent years? I mean, that kid tore up SEC secondaries pretty much for a couple of seasons, and a year ago it was like, hey, he's holding everything together. He's one of those upperclassmen that we're getting through because of him, and he's like, yeah, I'm out. And then goes undrafted. I mean, it took four different turns I would have never predicted as the eventual outcome that he is an undrafted free agent.
Go figure that all three of those guys, you're Courtney Davis there,
Kendrick
as well. And then Kendrick too. All three of those guys went undrafted.
Yeah.
And at this time last year, I'm saying to myself, stop assuming that A&M is going to become elite because they are really hurting at the pass catcher positions. And then when they lose Osmond, and they lose Osmond, and they lose Baylor Cup, the former number one overall tight end, and then they lose Buckley as well right before the start of the season, I'm looking around like, who's going to catch passes for this team? And then they figured it out. Jalen Weinermeyer was one of the best tight ends in all of college football. They got the running backs involved in the passing game. Anaya Smith was a revelation, and it just kind of worked. And that was despite the fact that they lost Caleb Chapman, who people forget.
Oh, early,
he
grew
up against Florida, and then he tears his ACL on that touchdown, and they lose him. They return him this year. And if they stay healthy at the pass catching position, I just think that they have so many different options and so many different guys that can take over a given game that all of a sudden it's just much, much different than what we were talking about at this time last year.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Connors, great stuff, brother. Talk to you soon, man.
Yep, appreciate it.
All right, Connor Gara from Saturday Down South again. That whole receiver core, I mean, you can go back. Mike Evans, he's a first-round pick, and he is a monster in the NFL. And I'm just giving you projections and an outcome that surprised me. I think Ricky Seals-Jones, I think he was undrafted as well. Josh Reynolds is in the league or has been in the league. But, again, Mike Evans is the only kid. They've had so many kids come through there catching a bunch of passes. So, has been a really surprising outcome, at least on that Sunday level. All right, we're going to break, come back, wrap up on a Wednesday next.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Hey, sandwich lovers. Today's your lucky day. There's a whole new way to roll for lunch or dinner delight with Nucky's Hoagies in the Roswell Corners Shopping Center. Now open. Nucky's Hoagies in Roswell is family owned and operated by the sub-sisters, Stacy and Shannon, whose love language is food and Nucky's Hoagies, their passion. When you bite into a Nucky's Hoagie, you'll taste the difference. The softest hoagie rolls ever, along with hunger-quenching sandwich combinations. Make Nucky's Hoagies in Roswell on Woodstock Road your new favorite spot for lunch or dinner.
Catch the king of college football no matter where you go with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
Until somebody challenges Clemson, it's going to be thought of as a one conference league, because why do people think the SEC is great? Because you've got a Georgia, you've got an A&M, you got an LSU that jumps in. There are more teams that are capable of playing in the national championship playoff caliber party, whereas in the ACC, no.
That's what you're going to get from Chris Landry, LandryFootball.com, every single Wednesday on this program or every day at his website. I said it's got to be Florida State. There are other programs that on a particular Saturday could beat Clemson. There is no other program that on a consistent year-to-year basis can potentially keep Clemson out of Charlotte. Not the Clemson that it is now. And FSU can do that. And so I was having conversations with different folks over the past few days, and there was an NC State conversation. There was a Louisville conversation. I was like, yeah, they're all getting better compared to themselves, not to Clemson. Louisville's getting better and losing ground. Louisville is getting better and getting further away from Wake Forest. My gosh, Wake Forest is so much better than they were like 5 years ago. They're not within 17 light years. Do you ever see Planet of the Apes? Dan, do you see the original Planet of the Apes ever?
Charlton Heston, yeah.
They like traveled, I don't know, a couple hundred years apparently. All right, that's how far away those programs are. I promise you, the Statue of Liberty in Winston-Salem, sand up to the shoulders. That's how far away from Clemson they are. It's got to be FSU, so appreciate Chris Landry coming on there. Let me go ahead and wrap this up with the closing argument.
The King's Closing Arguments, presented by the best closing attorneys in the business, Alexander Shannara and Associates.
I had mentioned earlier that a college basketball coach retired, and I was going to tell you why all of us on this college football show care about it. An NBA coach, I said, retired, and there was a reason all of us should care about it. And there's another coach who's retired as well. So Brad Stevens has resigned as head coach of the Boston Celtics. He's now going to be team president. He's worn out, he says. He replaces Danny Ainge, who is retiring. Danny Ainge is 62 years old, and at the same time, Coach K, head coach at Duke University, he's announced his retirement as well, and he's in his mid-70s. There's always this conversation about what's up, what caused this. When a guy or a lady decides, I'm done right here, right now, we always want to know what the behind-the-scenes story is. There's no behind-the-scenes stories with Coach K. He went to work beginning in 1969. Do you realize that? He graduated from West Point, became an officer in the Army. He's worked for 52 years. How many people do you know that's worked for 50? I remember Jimbo Fisher telling me that, like, his mom taught science in West Virginia in high school for, like, 60 years. Outside of coaching and athletics and front offices, who goes to work in 1969 and in 2021 looks around and is like, all right, I'm done? He should have retired 25 years ago. If you look at the case of Danny Ainge, and see, everybody just looks at his age, and they're like, all right, well, he's earned it. Danny Ainge is only 62, and he's had a very successful run for over a decade, about a decade and a half, as president of the Boston Celtics. Well, what's up? Why did he quit? Folks, Danny Ainge went to work in 1979. As a junior at BYU, he was drafted by the Toronto Blue Jays. He went and played Major League Baseball for a couple. Actually, he was drafted in 77. He made the majors in 79. He was 20 years old, and he was a professional Major League Baseball player for 2 years. Then he went to go play for the Boston Celtics. Then he became an a coach and then an executive. Danny Ainge has been working since 1979. When someone works 42 years and then decides, all right, I'm going to retire, does something have to be up? I asked Nick Saban. This was media days. It was in Birmingham, so that would have been 19. The most recent one in Birmingham. That was 2 years ago. I said, you graduated from Kent State in 1973 and went straight to work. He's like, yeah. I was like, what are you doing? a fireman, an astronaut. I mean, whoever you are, you don't start working and work 47 years. Nick Saban and Coach K, they're at the exact same spot that it's been a conversation for a while, and so we're quote, expecting, we're ready for it. Guy like Danny Ainge, he's only 62. What's up? Did he get forced out? He's been working since the late 70s. Jimmy Carter was still the president when Danny Ainge got his first paycheck. Just let the man go to retirement. There's not always something up. That is my closing argument, brought by the law offices of Alexander, Shannara, and Associates. Wherever you are in the Deep South, you need legal expertise. You need Alexander, Shannara, and Associates. That's it. Danny Ainge retiring and Brad Stevens, the coach, deciding I'm going to resign as head coach and then be moved to president. It was because Stevens, has been reported, quote, has been worn out with coaching since the bubble last year, the pandemic and all that. And so that's why we talked about how that has spread all around sports, personal lives, everything. And then the additional picture with Danny Ainge saying, I'm at 62, I've been working for 40 years, and I think I can walk into retirement with a little dignity now. Oh, what's up? Is there a scandal? Was he forced out? No, he's tired. Dan, what's up?
Coaching is a lot. I mean, it's the bottom line. Coaching's a lot. Yep. And that's why, you know, I talked about the other day of coaches moving around, going from place to place. And let's just say, for example, there is a coach who moves from Miami. Nice spot right there, South Florida. Beautiful weather, great beaches, all those different types of things. Goes and coaches at Wyoming. Some people might look at him and say, what the hell are you doing going up there? Because, Chuck, for coaches, the places don't matter. It's the coach's office. It's the field. It's the practice room. It's everything like that, that all that matters. Your house and where you live at that certain point is just four walls, something comfortable enough to sleep on, and then back to work. That's all it really is. So, no, it's a grind. There's no doubt about it. By the way, you asked for Pete Futak. You get Pete Futak.
Awesome.
Tomorrow. Bottom of hour one. Yay. Coming your way. Not a lot of coaches get do-overs in lives, and I would say that Kirby, more or less, with the tight end position, it's a never been here before with Arik Gilbert, because some people look at Darnell Washington and say, why don't you throw him the football more? Maybe just wasn't ready to have the football thrown his direction last year, but the talent is there. The size is there. Everything that is just a freak of nature at the position, it is there. I think that people get caught up in what, say, for example, Isaac Nauta was at the tight end position and say, darn you, Jim Chaney, for never throwing to the tight end. You just wasted a five-star talent. Now everybody, I think, is holding those sins against Kirby and against Todd Monken and how they're going to involve Arik Gilbert. Chuck, I'll tell you right now, he's not a tight end that they have seen inside this building before. As a matter of fact, they hadn't even sniffed a player that has the versatility that Gilbert has, because you're already talking about a guy who is already going to be looked at as somebody that could play X, and you can split him out wide. You need him as inline to block, do anything like that. I don't know why you would harp on that, but if you need it, it's there. And then also, too, being able to do everything that a tight end can do. The versatility is unreal. The size is unreal. The route running for such a young guy is unreal. Everything that this guy brings, Chuck, I would maintain they have never had it around before. So now it is going to be incumbent upon them to not only have it, but also use it.
Yeah, it's not a normal thing to get a five-star tight end, and it winds up that, I guess, Kirby got two out of the same high school class? That's just amazing stuff, man. Good for him. All right, so wraps it up on a Wednesday. Be back tomorrow with more college football conversation right here on Chuck Oliver Show.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Is there chaos in your closet?
Look, Blouse, you've got some nerve hanging there like that.
I can't help it. I'm jammed in here next to this suit.
Hey, I'm a three-piece, all right? Which means I need a little more room.
You've got a lot of attitude for a linen suit.
I'm a polyester blend, sweetheart. There needs to be room for men's clothes, too.
Hi, I'm Christina, and at Artisan Custom Closets, we help families organize and simplify their closets with customized storage solutions. See what's possible for your home at artisancustomclosets.com and then call us for a free in-home consultation.